I know as an architect, it's always got to be thrilling to go back to some of the projects you've worked on over the years. And I know Miss Wood, in a lot of ways, is a very special one for you because you worked here not once, but actually twice. So tell us what it's like to be back at Miss Wood and see it hosting a championship.
It's exciting and it's sad at the same time because of our dear friend, the passing of Jim McQuethy. Jim and I have so many memories. His children, Todd and Gretchen, are doing a phenomenal job. The future's in great shape. But obviously, when I came, it was a little bittersweet thinking about Jim. The many stories, and you know, I was the original designer under Sherm Barstead and the investors. And Jim McQuethy was one of the investors. And then over the years, then Jim obviously purchased the club, and then Jim and I had so much fun. I mean, conversations three times a day, texts, late evening calls, labor of love. Just the land and stone that you're looking at, gentlemen, around the ponds. Jim and I went up to Wisconsin and looked at a quarry. We spent all day looking at land and stone for the perfect stone with the perfect color to go in the retaining walls. Then we were with Dan Wolfile, the clubhouse architect, and we started looking at stone for the clubhouse. That's the detail and the level we got into with Jim. Our angles and options in golf course design, we take a lot of pride in this. And I would say this is commonplace in about 50% of the modern architects that do this. It's called strategy and feature development. Some architects go right from the master planning to construction drawings, and that's kind of a sin, in my opinion. But, you know, some do it. Maybe their thoughts are that we're putting enough, you know, design development in the master plans. We, from the master plans, go into the individual where you scrape and doodle and talk about angles, and this bunker is turned 30 degrees versus 50. Jim and I had those discussions, and Jim made me earn my PhD, my thesis on every hole, on every feature, and he wanted to know why. Now, Jim, I would say, you know, Reese Jones always told me this years ago, when you bet 85% on a remodeling, you're doing well. I think I was kind of in the 90 to 95 with Jim, but once in a while, you know, Jim would have a particular item. And I mean, there's a story on each hole. What was the great debate that you're seeing today is obviously the amateur championship wanted to see this as hole 18, and it is. This was designed for Jim. It's hole number three, and it is number three in the current the routing for the course. But I think as the tournament goes on, the championship, as they're going into 18, this hole is everything. It's a eagle, it's a birdie, it's a par, it's a bogey, it's a double bogey. Mm-hmm. This, you know, depending where the pin placement is. Now today, when you're looking out on number 18, old number three, or current number three on the Mistwood scorecard, I've got what I call the devil's spine that kind of bifurcates the green in two sections, and it comes out of the back left. That's where the pin is today. It's up on top of the flat spine. And I've been watching golfers, and these golfers are so skilled, so skilled. You're not seeing many three putts, but I'll tell you, I'm watching and I'm not seeing a lot of birdies roll in. But, you know, with technology now, with clubs and the golf ball, you know, I'm watching the Hope College men's golf team at Mecatello Legends, which I designed in my hometown of Holland, Michigan. And, you know, they're just trajectory-wise, they're landing the ball at 300, 310, and then they're getting the roll. It's something that we could spend a whole interview on talking about that. It has been talked about. I just hope as time marches on, the USGA and the Royal and Ancient just kind of come together. And I think this is going to happen, in my opinion. I think one tournament is going to say, hey, play whatever equipment fancies you. And they all the PGA Tour players have their sponsorships. But on the golf ball, Augusta National, I'm betting, is the first club that's going to say, here is our ball. And you can put your logo on, you can whatever, and obviously you got to be able to identify it in the course. But we're going to play an 85%. I think that's in the future. And other people say that too. Now, Augusta National has, no, they've never released that they're going to, but I bet that happens.
They're the one that could get away with it.
Yes, they could. They could name their own rules and say, listen, hey, if you want to play in our sandbox, you play by our rules.
Otherwise, you're going to play in a Magnolia Classic.
More about Ms. Wood on...
Ray, can we get you just talking about, well, I know it's not number three today.
Right.
But it seemed like when you were brought back for the renovation, it all started with some stuff going on the third hole, then it just expanded from there.
Oh, yeah. This is a story that every key staffer here knows. Jim used to laugh about it. Dan Wolfile, the clubhouse architect, shed a few tears over it. I get a phone call from Jim McQuethy and says, Ray, I need you to drive out next week to Miss. So I said, Jim, I got a pretty full. No, I need you to just make time. You know, rearrangers come out. I have to have you look at something very important. So I said, okay, Jim, you're a great friend. One of my classic designs. I'll do it. So I rearrange my schedule. I come out, and they unfold, the staff, Dan Wolf, these plans for a massive clubhouse that is kind of right where the seawall is. So it was a lot further up. Jim was like, you know, to build this hole is going to have to be shortened. So, you know, we've all sketched out a thing where we think the green should go. And I said, well, number one, it'll diminish the quality of the hole. And you remember the old hole kind of had a little creek in front of the green. And I said, it's going to be pushed up on the other side. So you're not going to have, it's going to be a shortened hole. But I said, the biggest problem you have is golfers overshooting the green are going to be hitting the clubhouse. So Jim was like, well, that's not good. And I said, no, it's not. And everyone at the table. And so Jim said, I want you to come back in a week, come with a redesign plan for this hole, which it was basically three options. This was one of the options. Dan Wolfile looks at me, and he's like, well, great, Ray. I got construction drawings. We're ready to almost break ground on this. And then you come up with this last second, you know, catch 22. And I said, well, you know, Dan, I love Dan, and Dan gets along with me. But, and then Andy Krajewski, former general manager, said, well, really, Jim, we should have Ray look at the other holes. And Jim, being the visionary that is, said, absolutely, if this is going to be redone, I don't want this hole to stick out from the others. So Jim said, take a comprehensive look at all the other holes. So then started my journey on the master planning and design and strategy and feature development, and went hole by hole. And then at the grand opening of the golf course, Dan Wolfile, you know, kind of gave a little tongue-in-cheek speech after I was done. He's like, great, I come here, I'm ready to break ground on this beautiful. And it was a huge clubhouse, very different than this. And then he said, Ray Hearn comes in, waves his arms in the air and spouts out a couple things. And all of a sudden, he's in the middle of a 18-hole massive redesign contract, and I have nothing. Oh, my goodness.
That's great. I remember Wolfield felt
it's like he had a castle ready to build here.
Oh,
and this is kind of a castle in itself.
Dan did a phenomenal job on this. Jim was equally as proud of the golf course and the clubhouse. So Dan is just an artist at what he does. Wouldn't you say in this Chicago area, this is a pretty unique clubhouse?
Yeah, especially as modern clubhouses.
Yeah.
Current era, most of them are kind of cookie cutters.
Exactly.
You've got style to it.
Ray, I know that after the golf course was done and the Performance Center is wrapping up, I'm standing on the golf course with Jim one day, and he says, "What do you think of the clubhouse?" And I said, "Jim, you're not going to want to hear my answer." And he says, "No, you got to tell me. I got to honestly know." And I said, "After what you've done to the golf course and what you're doing with this Performance Center, that old clubhouse sticks out like a sore thumb." I said, "I change it, build a new one, do something, but it doesn't fit with what you've done with the rest of the property." And he goes, "Thank you. That's exactly what I wanted to hear."
Yeah, the old clubhouse to me was an amorphous of a funeral home, a commercial office space, and a small big box building. It was something else to look at, and
it's like they built it upside down. Let's have the pro shop on.
I don't know. It was functional, and I'm kind of being tongue in cheek with that. It just compared to this, there's no comparison.
Yeah, bathrooms were awful.
And they had in the original clubhouse, they had a problem with the septic field. Yeah. Once in a while, it would back up.
Yeah.
And then you would start sniffing and looking at the person next to you eating lunch. And you're like, "Wow, is this them or is this the building?"
It was new, old.
Yes.
Ray, going back to the golf course, talk about the next phase of how it went from the third hole to we're going to get out there and we're going to do some things and make this course look a little bit more like a McWethy built it, somebody with a Irish background, and we're going to put in British Open style looking bunkers. We're going to add fescue. We're going to have a mounding change, and we're going to get rid of trees and brush and open it up. And how did that discussion go with Jim into making it look more like a Scottish Irish links course designed by a guy whose last name's McWethy?
Exactly. And that's a story unto itself. So I'll give you the very shortened version. Jim said, "Ray, I want you to come up with something innovative. I want to rebrand this. And so we started talking about different styles. I'd give him some Photoshop images. And I said, "Jim, I really want this to have, Scottish, Irish, or British Isles look to it." And we took down a lot of trees, and there weren't a lot of trees out there, but we still, it was probably a couple hundred, maybe 300 that we took down. And then I said this, "Jim, I want to do the Rosette wall bunkers out here." And Jim was like, "Oh, really?" And I said, "Well, Jim, that gasp, is that a good gasp or a surprise gasp or a negative?" And he said, "I don't know." So Jim was like, "You know, Ray, I'm going to run that by some of my friends at the Chicago Golf Club, and I'll run it by, some media. I don't know, if he spoke to you about it." But then Jim comes back to me in 2 weeks, and I was like, "Jim, how did the idea go among your circle and running it by?" He said, "It couldn't have gone any worse." Horrible. He said, "Everybody said, number one, they're too penal. And number two, you got to rebuild them. And then the maintenance on that." And I said, "Well, that's a shame." He said, and so he said, "Ray, based on my response to you as an architect, what do you think?" I said, "Jim, I still say we do them." And he said, "I agree with you 100%. So he was kind of testing me. Yeah. He was already in his mind. Yeah. And then Ben Kellenhofer, just a great superintendent. You just look out there right now for the State Am Championship. Ben was in favor of them, and he liked them. And Ben, his assistant, and then all the staff was too. At the time, Dan Phillips, Dan Bradley, Andy Krajewski, they all were like, "Yes, that's really..." When we looked at, Jim was like, "How many should we do?" That was the big question. And we started, the design, placing them here and there. Personally, I wanted to do almost every bunker out here. And Jim was like, "Oh, I think that might be a little overwhelming." The most treacherous bunker, as you know, is right in the middle of the approach on number 12. So Mr. Rome from your news station in Chicago.
Dan Rome, Channel 9.
Dan is a pretty good golfer. So he comes out and he's golfing, and Jim is a little nervous. "Oh, I hope, every time you gentlemen came out, Jim said, I hope we get good reviews by whoever comes out. So Dan hit it in this front approach bunker on number 12, and he stymied against the wall. And he said to the film crew, roll it. And I'm sitting there going, oh, great. Jim is like, Ray, I'm going to eliminate this bunker right after this thing. It'll be airtight. Dan looks at me and he goes, Ray, what? I said, you know, and I was in bunkers like this at Cruden Bay, at Turnberry, at Royal St. George, at Sunningdale. Open up your blade, slam it into the ball on the wall. Hopefully it pops straight up, and hope you don't break your wrist. So I said, this, the biggest thing, don't break your wrist. So Dan gets in there, hits the shot. It almost goes vertical, and you have to with this bunker. And then he hits it 8 inches from the hole and taps it in from there. And I'm like, wow, what a great save that was. And Jim was like, whoo. He goes, man, my heart was really about 200 beats a minute, Ray. And I was like, Jim, I was right behind you on that. But Jim and I are out 2 weeks later. And we're watching an elderly lady who's in one of the bunkers and just whacking. And Jim, you know, tongue-in-cheek, said, I'd like to introduce you to the guy that designed this bunker, ma'am. And she is like, oh, God bless you. I love these bunkers. And after watching five whacks, I'm like, wow, that's unusual.
Yeah.
And she goes, you know why? Because I will never have the good fortune of going overseas and playing the Gems in the British Isles. And that has been the recurring theme for all these comments that have come in over the years that, hey, I'm never going to get over there, but you gave me a little taste. I really appreciate it. And these bunkers are priceless. So Jim and I are so glad that went through, and I'm glad Jim blessed my design, and I think they're fabulous. I've offered this to other clients around the U.S., and they're all a little bit, you know, hesitant. They might, you know, one or two here, and then that's kind of quirky to see one or two.
But you built a certain amount here, and then after the course opened, you came back and you added a few more.
Added a few more, yes. And Jim was in favor of that, and as time went on, you know, and obviously, I mean, we're all saddened by Jim's passing. Jim was like, you know, we'll go around the course and maybe look at a couple more opportunities here and there. And I hope I've offered that to Todd and Gretchen and the staff here that I would like to add, you know, a couple here and there as time goes on. But Mistwood, from a player's, now take your media hats off and go to your players. Hat. And as you play around, I really believe every hole has a personality here. They're just unique. And in golf architecture, that's hard to achieve. You don't always, the stars don't always line up. And some of my designs, I look back and I'm like, wow, you know, whether a major redesign or, you know, a new 18-hole design, which is kind of in the rearview window, those are pretty rare nowadays. You know, you look at those and you're like, oh, you know, I kind of got two vanilla ice cream holes that, you know, are kind of.
You go, Ray, what was I thinking?
Yeah. You know,
say that about you.
Oh, I'm sure you do. The greatest modern day mind was always Pete Dye. Pete was one of my sponsors, one of five sponsors getting in the ASGCA. The American Society of Golf Course Architects. Pete evaluated the Majestic at Lake Walden in mid-central Michigan. And Pete always said, you know, Ray, golf architecture is the darndest thing. You know, you're entrusted to do a new design, like here I did the original. And then lo and behold, several years later, they'll pay you to come back and fix it up. He goes, that doesn't get any better than that, does it? and only Pete would say it like that. And Pete was like, you know, I look at all my designs and I want to tinker with them and tinker. Pete was an artist and some said a mad scientist. He was always thinking about the agronomics, the angles and all that. So Pete was constantly tinkering with stuff that he's done. What was sad?
Well, Pete sold insurance. So you got to come back and upgrade the policy, right?
There you go. That's unique. That's a good analogy right there. Yeah, him and Alice were fantastic. And I helped Pete on a project years ago, the Wabi Country Club. I think it was his second collaboration with Jack Nicklaus. And he said, Ray, Jack and I just fought like cats and dogs on this whole project. They called me in to fix it up, and I need someone to do all my CAD work, my renderings, and all that. So I did, and that was the favor that I called in later. He had, if I do this, I want you to be one of my sponsors. He goes, oh, hell, I'll even pay you. I'll pay you, and I'll be your sponsor. And I was like, done deal. So we're going around that club, and Pete was so blatantly honest. And I think that's what made him Pete, and everybody loved him. He would say, I don't know what the hell I was thinking on this hole. Oh my goodness, I should refund you the money on this hole. And then other holes were pretty darn nice. But when he ran into something that he didn't like, he would openly say, what was I thinking about? And then obviously it was a long-term master plan. So Pete allowed me to beyond the draft to interject a couple ideas. Or overall, the redesign was a Pete Dye design, but he asked my opinion on about five different holes, which I did, and I loved working under him on that particular project. Mistwood, in its original days, the Barstead family, they were very close to hiring Dick and Tim Nugent to do this. So I, Dick is deceased, yeah. And I love Dick, and Tim's just a great architect too. So I was very fortunate, because if you remember, I had started my company in 1996. Golf Week just did a nice tribute to my 25-year anniversary. A couple media members were saying, Ray, how did you start out? And I said, well, for years, I worked for Matthews and Associates, Jerry Matthews. I was his senior designer for a lot of those years. And then I, Ron Witten, Golf Digest, some others said, hey, you could flap your own rings pretty soon. And some friends were saying that too. And I sat down with Jerry and said, Jerry, I really want to make this venture on my own. And then, Jerry was like, no, I want you to stay with me forever. You're not going to leave. And I'm like, well, this is America. I get a choice. So we spoke about it. And then he gave me his blessing and gave me half the current contracts that they had. But a week after I started my company, 1 week, I get this phone call from Sherm Barstead. And remember, Jim McQuethy was one of his main investors. He goes, Ray, we have a course that we'd like you to do in Chicago, Romeoville specifically. And then I got a call from Dan and John Rooney, Folds of Honor. I did the Traditions of Golf in Edmond, Oklahoma. And then I got a call from a gentleman by the name of Fred Stryker for the Sea Oaks Country Club. And then we landed a big remodeling for the Tam and Shanter Country Club in West Bloomfield. So 1 week, the horses are out of the stall. I'm off and running. I'm in the race. And before that, do you gentlemen
remember? I was going to say, when did you get the call from the guy that said, I'm the agent for Bob Seger, and he likes your work, and you can build the golf course?
Well, that is a story, and obviously Rory knows a little about it. I'm working for a gentleman by the name of Greg Shank, and I'm putting it together with Doug O'Rourke, who's a contractor, a golf course owner in Michigan. And I needed more land. So I said, you got to buy the land to the south, and then it'll be a nice 18-hole. You'll be able to put some residential on the outside edges. So I see this sign in the woods. It's kind of falling off, and it says, Great Northern Hay Company. You could barely read it. So Google or the internet was just starting. So I found a little article on the Great Northern Hay Company. So I call the number. And someone answers on the other end. And I said, listen, do you own this land? And I described the look. Yes, we do. I said, I have a client that would like to purchase this for you, from you. And so he goes, oh, yeah, we'll be interested in probably selling. Meet us in downtown Birmingham, Michigan, high rent district. Come with your client. So we come in, and we come into this building, and all these gold and silver albums are on the wall. It's Bob Seger's office and his agent, Punch Andrews, which he always took the claim to fame. He coined the phrase that Ford used for years, like a rock. Was it Ford or Chevy? Ford. And he told how he made Seeger's 10 of millions of dollars doing it. So we sat down. I only got a chance to meet Bob Seger once, but in the first meeting, you know, I was like, holy cow. And he's telling me about each of the gold and platinum and silver. So we sit down, and Greg Shank was pretty nervous, and he said, well, Ray Hearn wants me to buy this additional 150 acres, which wasn't cheap. And he goes, how do you even know we'll sell? And he said, well, Ray said, someone that answered your phone said. And he goes, ah, that's my assistant. He goes, how much are you going to want to pay for it? And I don't want to say he's confident. He threw out a figure, and he goes, oh, that's way too low. I want this. And then Greg Shank said, well, that's way too high. I could never afford that. And he goes, you know, just give me your best offer. And he goes, this. And he goes, I told you that's too low. And we're ready to walk out of the office. He goes, ah, you got a deal. We'll do it. He goes, Bob and I each want a lot and, you know, a little fraction of the ownership of everything. And then we're off and running with that project. It was incredible.
When you design a course or come back to redesign, do you think championship in the back of your mind, or are you just thinking about really high-end daily play from good players?
Yeah, the other 51 weeks a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. You, gentlemen, that is the toughest task in golf course design. And really, I think that separates the men from the boys and the women from the girls in my profession. It's easy to slant one way or the other. And you can immediately tell that on a design. Alistair McKenzie was not the greatest golfer in the world. You know that. I mean, his best golf was played at near the end of his career. And he was able to feel, you know, the shots of different golfers. I think if you don't do both to the nth degree, you're falling short. You're not, you know, you're not striving for the holy grail.